Could the league return in Las Vegas? Jason Tatum talks about what it's like waiting for his COVID-19 test result. And we begin our deep dive into Boston Celtics history on this Tuesday, Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melody. John Corral is here of MassLive.com. Welcoming you to a Tuesday Locked On Celtics. Thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. Very much appreciate that you are still doing that. I really mean it. That's just amazing that you're still doing it. Everybody's routine has changed. So if you're working a podcast into your routine, it really is. It's very much appreciated. I know my podcast listening habits have changed. I used to listen at the gym. There's no gym anymore. Used to listen on my way to practices. There's no practice anymore. So a lot of opportunities for me to listen to shows have gone by the wayside. So thank you for still sticking around. As is probably going to be the case, each one of these days is going to be a little bit different. Today, there's a little bit of news that I wanted to get into the first segment before I get into the second segment. So how this works is Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com and I have already had our conversation about the 1950s, basically 1946 through the end of the 50s. That's all done. So I'm just going to take the chunks of it and put it in a row for you to listen to. But in these first segments, just give you a little bit of what's happening in the world that you might have missed. So one of those things is a report from CNBC that the NBA is looking at Las Vegas. And I'm actually mad at myself for not realizing that Las Vegas could be a potential location. One of the reasons why I didn't think of Las Vegas is because, you know, casinos and all that stuff, I wasn't sure, like, I wasn't thinking about that type of location. But if the NBA can figure out a way to keep guys safe and sterilized and all of that stuff, all of the things that I've been saying, they have a plan that already works for Summer League. They've already, when I talk about them going to universities and all that stuff, they do that at UNLV with the Thomas and Mack Center and the Cox Pavilion. They do that every summer. They've got games going at, you know, two at once on each side, televised. They know the lay of the land. They know everything. They've got a plan in place for that location. So it would not be that difficult logistically to make that happen. You've got two courts going on at the same time. Now, Steve Kerr said that he doesn't think the bottom of the league would come back, which is an interesting comment that he made on the Howard Beck podcast. But there is a possibility that they could take the 16 playoff teams plus the four teams that are competing on in each conference for the playoffs, two in each conference, and that would be 20. And you could do the plan that I've been talking about, 10 and 10. You could do a 20-team round robin because they're both in the same location. If everybody's tested, healthy, ready to go, they have UNLV safe, sterile, all of that stuff. If they can control that environment, they can control where these guys stay, that might work. That, like I said, they do Summer League there anyway, so they know everything about it. They know what the situation is. They can set things up. It would be a wild kind of risk to take to bring these guys to Las Vegas, of all cities. I would be assuming that, I can't assume anything, actually. I was going to say, I would be assuming that some of this stuff would be shut down, but at that point, you would think that a lot of life has maybe come back to normal to some degree. Whatever it is, bringing all of these people to Las Vegas is very risky because 20 teams, 15 players per team, plus staff, plus coaches, plus, you know, other people in the periphery that will be working for these teams. All it takes is like one person. All it takes is one to go to a place, go to a restaurant, do something that breaks the quarantine, that has somebody over that thinks, oh, this isn't so bad. And if that person gets it and then they kind of spread it, then the whole thing comes tumbling down. Because all it takes is one, and that person transfers it to three people, and there's such close proximity. You're playing a basketball game, then the whatever it is, 18 people who play and share the floor, and the referees and the coaches, like, they all spread it to each other, and then it's over. The entire thing is over. Forget it. And all it takes is one person. And in Las Vegas, it's very tempting for one person to break the rules. Okay, Vegas is made for breaking the rules. That's their entire marketing campaign. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. They've spent all of that time, whatever their new slogan is, whatever. The whole point of Las Vegas, it's Sin City. It's the place where rules are made to be broken. So that's the big risk. But it's a familiar place. So keep an eye on that. I'm very interested in that. Jason Tatum also spoke. He was on the Jeff Goodman podcast, and he talked a little bit about a couple of things. He talked about the getting the COVID-19 test, said it was scary that, you know, waiting for the results once Marcus Smart got them, you know, which is not a surprise. He spent 10 days away from Deuce, his son, which is, you know, I'm sure those of you with parents, and especially when you have young kids, you're in the same city as your child, and you can only FaceTime with your kid. That has to be frustrating. So some interesting comments there. I was more interested in what Tatum said about his own game, where he talked about putting the pressure on himself. And when we think back to Jason Tatum's season, this makes a lot of sense. He said that he kind of put so much pressure on himself that he, after every good performance, would be like, I'm making the All-Star game. He would text Drew Hanlon, his trainer, and he'd say, oh yeah, I'm making it now. And after every bad game, he'd be like, that's it, I'm not going to make it. And he kind of lived and died with his performances and put an extraordinary amount of pressure on himself to make the All-Star team. And when you look at when he was actually named to the All-Star team, how his performances changed, this is a clear indication of how much that freed him up, how much that allowed him to be like, all right, whew, I made it. And now I can just go play basketball. And it just goes to show that these young kids still put a lot of emphasis on this stuff. And as cool as he might seem, as quiet as he might seem, as collected, that is a strong indication of the importance. And when we say, let me loop Kemba into this whole thing. When we say things like, oh, it's just an exhibition, oh, it's just this, oh, he shouldn't have done that, and it's just the All-Star game, it's not just the All-Star game for these guys. It's not just the All-Star game for these guys, okay? Take this from Jason Tatum. Keep it in the back of your head. Every time you think when somebody's got a little nagging injury that they might be able to play through, might not, how important it is. And I don't care if you think it's bullshit. I don't care. It is not to them. This is a huge deal. And I can tell you, just from little things that I've experienced in my time, little tiny All-Star games here and there that mean really, really nothing, that are a speck of sand on the beach of basketball, how important those were to me. These guys are in the NBA. They're talking about NBA All-Star team. That means a lot to these guys. So please take that into account as you think about how these guys act about All-Star games and how we very flippantly say, well, he should just sit out. It means a lot to them. So that was the most interesting part of the conversation that he had with Jeff Goodman, because the ups and downs that he had earlier in the season, which I think were natural and I think were part of him just trying to figure out his game. Once he became an All-Star, that he said there was a huge weight lifted off his shoulders, and that kind of freed him up to start playing well, better. He was playing well, but playing better. And it's going to be interesting to see how that is moving forward, because now that he's made one, obviously he wants to make more, but I think that might come with a little bit more confidence. Again, young kid, just turned 22. This is part of it. Emotions, even for a guy that looks as cool as Tatum, emotions play a part in the game, and it did there for Tatum. Okay, when we return, the beginnings of the Boston Celtics franchise history. We get into our historical deep dives for the second and third segments of this podcast. I hope you enjoy that. I hope you are enjoying life without sports as best you can. We know that sports have come to a screeching halt. Basketball is benched. Pitchers are off the mound. But our friends at MyBookie are not going to let you down. You can stay sane, stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. Doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home. The fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker, not your thing, but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. They have professional dealers at their table, live, on site, 24/7. If your favorite squad's sidelined because of the pandemic, don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring your wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you could always do your part and make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like this. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit. And you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So let's start at the beginning. Joining me here, Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com. Celtics historian, that's what I call you, for sure.
Hi, John.
How's it going, Mike?
Good, thanks.
Mike?
Staying in the house, and no better time to talk about the Celtics.
Yeah, right? Let's just pass the time. With a nice discussion at home here. So follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Dinan, D-Y-N-O-N. Mike, I've known Mike for a while here. He's when I was still running Red's Army with Chuck. Mike came along and does a fantastic job. And really, very few people have a better grasp of Boston Celtics history than Mike. So I thought Mike would be perfect for this. And I'm very excited for this. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So let's start at the beginning for the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics were actually one of the original, you can say one of the original NBA teams, because they span back to the BAA. 1946, the BAA begins. They've got, 12 teams or so, 10 teams. I forget exactly what it was. But so it's a small league, in an atmosphere where the NBL already exists, running mostly out of Middle America. BAA comes along and they've got teams in Boston, Chicago, Philly, Washington, Baltimore. Like they come in and occupy the big arenas in big cities. So they become an immediate challenger. And the Boston Celtics, Mike, suck in the first 3 years of the BAA. Yes. It's kind of funny that before the NBA existed, the Celtics were really one of the worst teams in the league.
They were. The first four seasons did not go well. They made the playoffs only one time out of those four. The first three, I believe, were with the BAA. And then in 1949 and 50, they came into the NBA after the merger with the NBL created the NBA. So those teams, Celtics, 89 and 147 in four seasons.
So it's kind of funny to think like, all right, the Celtics are one of the worst teams in the league. They come out of the box slow, let's say. And things start to change after the merger. So like I said, the NBL was a league that really started in the Midwest. It used to be the Midwest Basketball Conference. That started well before the BAA, but because the BAA came along and had these big arenas, they really kind of sapped a lot of the interest from the NBL. And so the NBA is born. My favorite, I'm going to say my favorite a lot, because all of these are tied for like my favorite stories with the Celtics. But overall, the overarching thing is that there's so much luck involved. And part of the luck is the owner, Walter Brown, who, when he decides he's going with a new coach in 1950, comes out and asks the media, "Hey, who do you think should be my coach?" Can you imagine Wick Grosbeck? If, let's say, Brad Stevens decides, you know, I'm going to retire, and Wick Grosbeck comes down to the practice facility and goes, "Hey, guys, who do you guys think I should hire as coach?" And we give a name. He goes, "Oh, okay, I'll go get him." That's basically what happened.
You can't see that happening today?
Probably not.
Okay.
So Walter Brown looks at the landscape, asks the media, and he says, "All right, Red Auerbach, Red Auerbach's the guy? No problem." Well, Red Auerbach had already had history because he started coaching in the BAA. So let's start talking about Red's story before we get to this point where he gets hired by the Celtics. He's born where you were born, right?
Yes.
A couple of Brooklyn kids.
Brooklyn. Only the best.
Only
the
best.
That's one of my claims to fame, that I'm from Brooklyn, just like Red. You wouldn't have thought, if you didn't know better, you wouldn't have thought the coach of the Boston Celtics, the icon, would have been out of Brooklyn, but he was.
Yep. And so Brooklyn kid, and the Brooklyn upbringing is kind of important because he's a little, like, he's this Jewish kid in Brooklyn, in this area that's integrated, that his immediate exposure to humanity in this period, which is basically post-depression, is just being around people of all walks of life. And so that kind of shapes who Red Auerbach is. You know, he's the son of immigrants from Russia. He's exposed to all of these different, you know, backgrounds in Williamsburg. So with that background, he takes that into his basketball years. Where are you from in Brooklyn?
Area called Flatbush.
Flatbush. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not close to Williamsburg. That's on the other side of Brooklyn.
It's like central Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I went to Erasmus High School. Red went to Eastern District, which is another part of town entirely.
So Red plays basketball there. He goes to George Washington, and then he comes out, starts coaching high school, coaches the Navy basketball team, and then gets a job coaching the Washington Capitals in the BAA, and actually not surprisingly, Mike has a bit of success as a BAA coach.
Yeah, he was the Capitals coach. Obviously, he ran a fast break offense because that was one of his trademarks. And he said the Capitals set a record by winning 17 straight games, and that record stood in the NBA until 1969. They had a lot of regular season success, and they never quite got over the hump for the to win the championship, however.
Yeah, in fact, Red's first championship loss was to the Lakers. So
the Minneapolis Lakers.
That's right.
Important. Let's make that point clear.
Important distinction. Because in the NBA, Red never lost to the Lakers. But
correct.
As a BAA coach, he did. And so there's a little bit of trivia there that Red Auerbach's first championship, first time in a championship in the BAA, was a loss to the Minneapolis Lakers. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. It's interesting. The NBA traces its history back to this merger, but they adopt this BAA history. So they see the BAA as their predecessor. And the NBL, while it existed before, was kind of absorbed, and they see it as an expansion rather than a merger. And so the NBA history actually goes back to 1946, which is why in 1996 they did the 50-year team, the best 50 players of all time, even though the NBA came about in 1950. So Red's coaching in the BAA. Then he gets a job at Duke, and this is another one of my favorite stories about Red. So he's going from place to place, and he has these conflicts with the owners. He didn't like how the Washington Capitals were being run. So he ends up going to Duke, and he's an assistant there, and he gets promised basically the head coaching job at Duke once Jerry Girard, who was the coach at the time, basically died of cancer. That's the promise that they made him. They said, Jerry's got cancer. Whenever he's gone, you get the head coaching job. And Auerbach, the quote was, you know, I was there until the middle of December and felt funny waiting for him to die. So I left Duke and went to Tri-Cities. So we're this close. We're that moral kind of compass away from Red saying, you know what, I'm going to stick this out. I'm going to be the Duke head coach. Instead of playing at Cameron Indoor, they could have been playing at the Auerbach Center. That could be the actual Auerbach Center rather than the Celtics practice facility.
You know, you also mentioned in passing there, Tri-Cities. How many people listening to this podcast just said, what? who are the what's Tri-Cities?
Yeah.
And that was part of the small town type thing, because Tri-Cities is in Illinois. It's three cities, I believe Illinois and Iowa, that were in a small geographic area. And so the team, the Hawks, Blackhawks at the time, played there. And it's one of those things that could only have happened in the NBA back in the old days.
Yes. I mean, well, let's look at it this way for a second. Tri-Cities has a couple of important roles here with the formation of the Boston Celtics. So
yes.
So Red says, look, I'm not going to wait for this dude to die at Duke. I can't bring myself to do that. And he did die like a couple years later. He goes to Tri-Cities, and again, another conflict with how this thing is being built. And so he's at that time like if Red wasn't like so set in his ways about how he wanted the team to be built and what he wanted and all that stuff, he might have tried one of these other situations, might have worked out for him. But he kept saying, you know what, I'm done. I can't do this. That makes him available in 1950. And one of the interesting things is when he comes to Boston, Walter Brown is the owner. He owns the Garden. It's the relationship, Mike, with Walter Brown that really kind of cements Red as, okay, I can stop moving around. I can stop having these conflicting relationships, these bad relationships with the owners. Like, he looks at Walter Brown and says, this guy is a good guy. He's got no prejudices. This is a guy I can work with. And that's really this combination of Walter Brown and Red Auerbach merges very well, very quickly.
Yeah. From what I have read, Walter Brown knew that he didn't know anything about basketball. He was going to leave that to the experts. So Red Auerbach was that person. And Walter was primarily interested in having events fill his garden during the winter. And that's why he founded the Celtics. That's why most of the arenas got into the basketball business. And so he was smart enough to know that he should just let Red do what he needed to do.
So he does. And Red, you know, Red's quote about Walter Brown says, you know, when he was at the Garden as president and owner of the Celtics, the women that swept the Garden, he would tip his hat to them, open the door for them. There's no such thing as religious or racial prejudice in his own makeup. And this plays into now the first draft in 1950 for Red Auerbach. And let's begin here with the drafting of the first black player in the NBA, Chuck Cooper. And Red Auerbach says to Walter Brown, hey, I think this is the guy to pick at that time. And Walter Brown says, I don't care if he's green, if he can play, draft him. And so Red makes the pick, and that's what breaks the NBA's color barrier.
Right. Chuck Cooper did not end up being the first black player to be in a game. That was Earl Lloyd with the Knicks, but that was just by schedule timing. Chuck Cooper was the first black player drafted, and I believe he ended up being selected for the Hall of Fame recently.
He did. It was actually last year's induction. I was there for that. So a little late, but you know, it's great that he finally had that moment, even posthumously.
I think the only thing that I've ever heard about Walter Brown, other than in regard to ethnicity or race relations, good things like the story about Chuck Cooper. He picked the name the Celtics because of the large Irish population in Boston. And that was, again, a positive thing. He was appealing to the potential fans of the team. And that's the only time I can remember him making a decision based on ethnicity.
Yes. It's interesting, though, because that it's worth mentioning that is the reason why they were called the Celtics. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, different teams have different names for different reasons. They actually did name the Celtics after basically the population of the city of Boston. We're going to pause the history lesson right there. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up at the 1950 draft. The decision not to draft Bob Cousy with the territorial draft pick. This is an important moment. Tomorrow's podcast, we'll talk about maybe the most pivotal moment in franchise history. There may be no Celtics pride. There may be no Celtics championship run. Red Auerbach may not be the coach for very long. If one thing doesn't happen with him in 1950. Okay? I'm not even underplaying it. There's one moment that he has, that Red Auerbach has, after the 1950 draft that changes the entire course of Boston Celtics history. If it doesn't work out the way it did, then Red probably doesn't stay. Then things go south. Then Bill Russell doesn't show up. I'm not even underplaying it. That's how important this moment is. That's coming up tomorrow as we continue our deep dive into all of Boston Celtics history. And that pivotal moment comes in the first year of the Boston Celtics' existence in the NBA. So stick around for that. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Again, we're going through the entire 1950s. Mike and I have had this entire conversation. It's recorded. It's going to be released throughout the course of this week. Next week, we'll record another four episodes. So next week, Tuesday through Friday, the 1960s, the decade of dominance, all of that. And we continue on, 70s, 80s, 90s, all of that stuff. That's how we're going to carry you through the hiatus. Probably going to do more of these whatever breaking news things, kind of discussions at the beginning in the first segment, and then we'll go through the history lesson. So a little something new, a little something old to keep things fresh. So subscribe, 5-star ratings, and a good written review. You've made this podcast the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world, and I very much appreciate that. I hope to continue to earn those ratings and earn those written reviews. I hope that you continue to listen and follow through on this stuff. I'm still here for you Monday through Friday, even through this hiatus. Still doing 5 days a week for you. Still providing Celtics content for you as we continue to navigate this uncertain world. So please subscribe. Please share the podcast. And tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.